Is the recession over yet? After all, the Dow just cracked through the 11,000 level.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, welcome to the Morning Open. I'm Bob Moon. The panel of academics that decide such things isn't ready to declare an end to the recession yet. We'll explain that in a moment. But first, the stock market has just started a new week of trading. Where's Wall Street? The Dow has risen to 11,016, up 20 points at this hour. The S&P 500 is up 0.25%. The NASDAQ has gained 0.2%. Traders are piling on Palm. Bloomberg is reporting this morning the maker of the pre-smartphone is looking for buyers. Of the company, that is. Palm shares are up better than 10% this hour. Stocks in Europe are up, lifted by an offer from European nations to open a credit line of $40 billion for Greece. Okay, let's say good morning to Sam Stovall, Chief Investment Strategist at S&P Equity Research, joining us live from New York. Hi, Sam.
Good morning, Bob.
Sam, the market's been trading on hope for some time now, looking ahead to the latest corporate earnings in the next few weeks that start coming out today with Alcoa's results. What's Wall Street going to be looking for?
Well, I think first off, they're going to be looking for Alcoa today, Intel tomorrow, to kick things off with strong year-over-year gains in earnings, but also to show that there's a supportive rise in sales.
And what happens if the earnings don't live up to expectations?
Well, I think that if the earnings even just live up to expectations and don't exceed expectations and possibly don't even exceed revenue growth expectations, then maybe the old story of buy on rumor, sell on news kicks in now that we've breached that 11,000 level.
That academic panel that dates the beginnings and ends of recessions, the National Bureau of Economic Research, isn't ready to declare just yet when this downturn ended. Sam, what do you make of that?
Not too surprisingly, because they usually wait about a year after the recession has ended before saying that the speed bump we hit was a recession. Our belief is that it occurred in August of 2009, and I think what the group wants to do is to make sure that we don't engage in a double dip and therefore call the end to this recession too early.
Sam Stovall of S&P Equity Research, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
It'll be years before we know the full cost of the financial crisis, but one key part of the cost is a bit easier to quantify. The federal bailouts of banks, auto companies, mortgage giants, and others. A year ago, the estimate was the government would lose $250 billion in the end. Now that number is coming down, way down. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports.
The latest estimate from Treasury Department officials is that the government will lose $89 billion when all is said and done. That's because many of the investments taxpayers made in banks are already returning a profit, and officials tell the Wall Street Journal even AIG could be free from government support within a year. Banking analyst Bert Ely says the rising stock market is playing a big role in the increasingly sunny scenario.
The extent of profit or loss for the government in any of these initiatives is very much a function of what the stock price will be when the government sells off its investments in these companies.
Ely says the reason the government will end up in the red is because of bailouts directly connected to the mortgage market. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac alone, he says, could end up costing taxpayers more than $100 billion at the end of the day. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
This is the Marketplace Morning Report for Monday, April 12th at marketplace.org. Spring is in the air, so too is a strong earnings season. This afternoon, aluminum maker Alcoa kicks off as the first major company to release first quarter results. Marketplace's Brett Neely reports.
How good are earnings supposed to be this quarter? Diane Swonk is chief economist for Mesirow Financial.
I think we're going to see another very robust, strong double-digit earning growth across most industries, especially the non-financials.
But remember, that's in comparison to last year's numbers, when the economy was in the dumps. Swonk thinks few companies will fall short this quarter. That's because consumers are finally spending again, albeit modestly. Swonk says corporate cost-cutting is still behind much of the growth in profits. That reminds her of another economic recovery.
I remember the whole first half of the 1990s, everyone kept saying, you can't make money on cutting costs alone. Well, in fact, cutting costs created a bit of a virtuous cycle in terms of spurring productivity growth, adoption of new technologies.
The stock market is up 75% from its low point in March 2009. That has some market watchers saying strong profit reports aren't going to pull up stock prices much. I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
This week, the Tribune Company, owner of the LA Times and the Chicago Tribune, among others, goes to court with a reorganization plan to emerge from bankruptcy. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
Chicago real estate mogul Sam Zell took the Tribune Company private in an $8 billion leveraged buyout back in 2007, then couldn't pay the bills. He unloaded New York Newsday, put the Cubs up for sale, and finally filed for Chapter 11.
Just because Tribune Company went into bankruptcy doesn't mean its newspapers are losing money.
That's newspaper analyst John Morton. He says, in fact, the papers were pretty healthy. They just couldn't generate enough profit to cover Zell's debt payments once the economy got bad. Several of the Tribune's creditors have charged that the buyout was financially irresponsible to begin with. The company says its reorganization plan will settle some of those claims. And John Morton thinks Zell's aggressive cost-cutting at the papers may actually help them survive in the long run.
Some of the changes that he brought to the newspapers, the layoffs, the cutting of the news staffs, are very damaging. But it will mean, when they come out of bankruptcy, that they will be lean operators.
And perhaps better able to compete in a cutthroat media environment. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Delaware's insurance commissioner meets with insurers tomorrow. She's investigating complaints that insurance companies are refusing to pay for doctor-ordered stress tests. From the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Carrie Grenz has more.
When most people think of a stress test, they think of someone walking on a treadmill while wired to an EKG monitor. What the insurance companies denied is a more sophisticated test called a nuclear stress test. It records an image of blood flowing through the heart as the person walks. David McCarthy, the head of nuclear cardiology at the University of Pennsylvania, says the imaging test is a reliable way to identify heart disease, but it's also expensive and subject to pre-approval by some insurance plans. McCarthy says he's had patients denied coverage.
I mean, I think I'm ordering the test that I think is best for my patient than to have somebody sitting behind a desk in a computer screen make a judgment is, you know, upsetting, of course.
But not totally inappropriate, says Christopher Cannon. He's a cardiologist at Brigham and Women's Hospital, and he wrote the book, Evidence-Based Cardiology. He cites a recent study that found that more than 1 in 10 people who were given an imaging test didn't meet the criteria.
There are, you know, 13 or 14% that we could be trimming away.
And at $500 to $1,500 a pop, Cannon says stress tests are a good target for pre-authorization.
We do need to allow individualization for certain patients, but this would be a very good way to try and clamp down on some costs.
And many doctors have scaled back on ordering tests as part of routine exams. Cannon says the evidence didn't back it up. In Philadelphia, I'm Carrie Grenz for Marketplace.
Los Angeles is on mudslide alert again this morning as rain drenches the region. Much of that water usually runs into the ocean, but officials want to get individual developers to catch the runoff and recycle it. And LA's effort is becoming a model. From the Sustainability Desk, Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports.
Sherry Akers has a secret weapon when it comes to her garden.
I'll just take water from the rain barrel, take a bucket.
Akers shows off a 55-gallon plastic barrel in the backyard of her LA home. The city gave it to her as part of a pilot program to use more of the rain that falls
to water my potted plants. This is a dwarf blood red orange tree.
Normally, when the clouds open up, rain falls on her orange tree, but it also washes off streets and driveways and gets channeled to the ocean. The city wants to prevent that.
It's the number one source of pollution to the ocean.
Paula Daniels is a commissioner on LA's Board of Public Works. She says the city is considering making developers build in a way to catch rainwater and, among other things, redirect it to the water table below.
It's about trying to change the way we work the landscape and keep the runoff on the property as much as possible.
Daniel says developers could easily do that with planted areas, cisterns, or pavement that filters water instead of shuttling it to the drains. This could help recycle water in the drought-stricken area.
We will take the burden off of having to import water from Northern California.
If developers can't catch the water, the city would charge them a fee that on large construction sites could total more than $200,000.
They're looking for money.
Bill Davis is with the Southern California Contractors Association. Davis says the city's desperate for money, and this is a surefire way to raise it. He says the contractors he works with aren't trained to meet these kinds of requirements.
We know how to handle the water. What we don't know is how to keep it on a job site instead of sending it someplace.
Davis says the additional fees will cripple an already battered construction industry. Still, Philadelphia and the state of Maryland are forging ahead with similar requirements. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
And finally, Phil Mickelson won his third green jacket at the Masters yesterday on a very big wager. The national sporting supply chain Golfsmith offered buyers of certain kinds of drivers a full refund if Mickelson won. Golfsmith took out an insurance policy to cover the financial risk. Want to take a swing at how much the chain estimates the payback will cost its insurance companies? Around $1 million. I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.